Talk from the Surville congregation with the theme, Are You Walking with God? Brother DiPietro.
A social worker was at a luncheon with some of her colleagues. And she shared an experience with them that she had years earlier. There was a young boy from the urban ghetto who had been in a very serious car accident. He did not receive the proper medical attention. Very likely he would never walk again. Now, he wasn't part of her caseload, but she took him under her wings and she arranged for a top-notch orthopedic surgeon to perform the necessary medical procedures. And she also arranged for a highly skilled physiotherapist to oversee the post-operative rehabilitation process. All of that would take about 2 years. So she hasn't seen him for 2 years. One day he comes into her office. He's not in a wheelchair. He's not using crutches. He's walking. It was a miracle. And as they warmly embrace, she said, at that moment, I thought to myself, if I achieve nothing else in my life, at least I've made a difference in the life of one person. And then she paused and she looked at her colleagues and she asked them, where do you think that young man is today? Well, one of her colleagues said, he's probably an orthopedic surgeon. Another said, no, he's a physiotherapist. And the last of her colleagues piped up and said, no, he probably followed in your footsteps. He's a social worker. With deep sadness in her voice, she said, no, he's in a federal penitentiary serving a life sentence for a heinous crime that he committed. And then she concluded her story by saying, you see, I was instrumental in teaching him how to walk, but there was no one to teach him where to walk. Isn't that interesting? Friends, the only way to walk with meaning and purpose and contentment is to walk with God, which brings us to our theme, am I walking with God? Now, that expression, walking, is an illustrative expression used in the Bible, and it basically means to follow a way of life. So to walk with God then logically means to follow a way of life that is in harmony with God's will. And essentially, walking with God encompasses three things. Number one, let's turn to Hebrews 11 and 6. Hebrews 11 and 6. And notice the first of three items or things that are involved in walking with God. Hebrews 11 and 6, we read, moreover, without, do you see that, friends? Without faith, it is impossible to please God well. If we're going to walk with God, we need faith. What's interesting, if you look at that verse a little bit more closely, it doesn't say without faith, it is difficult to please God. It is, what's the word? Impossible. Well, the question is, what is faith? Well, the Greek word translated faith basically means trust, confidence, firm persuasion. So it's as if we're saying, Jehovah, I trust you. I have confidence in you. I am firmly persuaded that you are my Father, my God, and my friend. But have you ever been accused of having blind faith? Have you ever been told that you're naive because of believing in God? Well, to these ones, we ask the question, if they say that we have blind faith, we ask them, how many times have you gone to a doctor whose degrees you haven't verified? He gives you a prescription you can't read. You go to a pharmacist you've never met. He gives you a chemical compound you don't understand. And you go home and you read the bottle, take twice daily for a week. And you take it. Without having done any verification or validation. That's blind faith. Our faith is not blind. When we look to the heavens and when we look to the earth, what do we see? Intelligent design. Look at the human body. It's a marvel of engineering. From the macro to the micro, we see a loving creator. Our faith is based on tangible, concrete evidence. So if we're going to walk with God, what's the first thing? Faith. Number two, let's turn to Philippians chapter 1, and we're going to focus our attention on verse 7. So Philippians 1 and 7, just to give us some context. So Philippi is a Roman colony. So it has a very strong military character. Likely, there were no synagogues. And so it would have been very difficult to practice pure worship within the city perimeter. Now here's Paul preaching. And so what happens? Acting under false accusations, the city magistrates have Paul publicly beaten, thrown into prison. And then we know what happens. There's a miraculous deliverance, divine intervention. So the city magistrates, in order to save face because of this divine intervention, and they found out that he's a Roman citizen, in order to save face, they try to arrange with Paul a secret backdoor release. But Paul would have nothing of it. Do you know what Paul wanted? Philippians 1 and 7. Look at the last few words. What did Paul want? He wanted to defend and legally establish the good news. Paul wanted to defend the legal right in the Roman Empire to preach freely the good news. Well, what quality do you think that would have required of the Apostle Paul? Would it be fair to say courage? Absolutely. So if we're going to walk with God, we need faith and we need courage. You know, one scholar said about Paul, Paul wasn't just a witness in the dungeon. Paul was a witness in the courtroom. And remember, friends, a man who does not stand for something, a woman who does not stand for something, will fall for anything. If we're going to walk with God, we need to take a courageous stand for the truth. So faith, courage. Number three, let's turn to Jeremiah chapter, let's see here, Jeremiah chapter 10, and we're going to look at verse 23, just the latter part of verse 23. Okay, so we're looking for the third marker of walking with God. It does not belong to man who's walking, even to direct his step. This is an interesting statement. So as humans, we were created with neither the right nor the ability to govern ourselves. There's an old Chinese proverb that says, without assistance from heaven, man cannot walk an inch. And isn't that true? Just to illustrate, friends, when waters breach a shoreline, that's when disaster ensues, right? When we as humans breach the shoreline of our limitations, trying to govern ourselves, that's when disaster ensues. And history has proven it. Just to give you one example, one historian by the name of William H. McNeil, this is what he writes, looking at the record of human history and governance. The human adventure on the face of this planet has been an almost uninterrupted series of crisis and disruption of society's established order. What an accurate assessment. Ecclesiastes 8 and 9, man has dominated man to his harm, to his injury. So if we can't direct our step, then what do we need to do? Well, we need to allow God to direct our step. And that's the third element. Faith, courage, we need to allow God to direct our step. But the question is, can we trust Jehovah's guidance? Well, doesn't the Bible tell us that Jehovah gives advice with his eye upon us? Doesn't the Bible tell us that Jehovah teaches us to benefit ourselves? Doesn't the Bible tell us that he makes us fully competent, completely equipped for every good work? Yes, we can rely on Jehovah's guidance. And notice how one writer describes the Bible, this book of guidance that Jehovah has given us. The writer states, it is the mind of God. Read it to be wise. Believe it to be safe. Practice it to be holy. It contains light to direct you, food to support you, and comfort to cheer you. It is the traveler's map, the pilgrim's staff, the pilot's compass, the soldier's sword, and the Christian's character. What a beautiful description of God's word. So, if we're going to walk with God, do you remember the three elements? We need faith, we need courage, and we need to allow God to direct our step. Are there any examples in the Bible of individuals who walked with God? Numerous examples, but we're going to isolate the best example of all. And you know who that is? Jesus himself. You want to talk about faith? Matthew 6:33, do you remember Jesus' words recorded? Keep on seeking first the kingdom and his righteousness, and all these other things will be added to you. Friends, these are words that Jesus didn't simply preach or teach. These are words that Jesus lived by every single day of his life. He never put personal comfort and interests ahead of kingdom interests. He had faith, courage. Do you remember when he was before Pontius Pilate? He remains quiet, silent. Pontius becomes a little bit indignant. You're not speaking to me, Pilate says. You're not speaking to me. Do you not know that I have the authority to release you and I have the authority to impale you? And what was Jesus' answer? Do you remember? With courage, you would have no authority at all if it weren't granted to you from above. And what about allowing God to direct your step? Did he do that? Let's turn to John 5:19. John 5:19. And as we turn there, friends, I want you to think about the following scenario. So imagine you have a roommate and he's 30 years old. And you say to the roommate, hey, listen, after the meeting today, why don't we go for a bite? And your roommate says, that sounds great. I'd love to. Let me ask my dad. Would that be a little puzzling? I think so. Buddy, you're 30 years old. What do you mean you got to ask your dad if you can go for a bite to eat? Now, keep that in mind as we turn to John 5:19. And notice Jesus' words. What does he say here? Most truly, I say to you, the Son cannot do a single thing of his own initiative, but only what he sees the Father doing. Jesus would never, ever make a decision without going to his Father. Jesus was the type of person who said, before he made any decision, let me ask my dad. Isn't that awesome? So when we think of Jesus, did he walk with God? He had faith, he had courage, he allowed God to direct his every single step. Well, it's 2023. What does it mean for you and me to walk with God today? We know we need faith. We know we need courage. We know we need to allow God to direct our step. But in practical terms, what does it mean for you and me to walk with God today? We're going to look at three areas. Area number one is time management. Time management. Keep that in mind as we turn to Ephesians chapter 5. Ephesians chapter 5. Our focus is verse 15 and 16. Ephesians 5:15-16, we read, so keep strict watch that how you walk is not as unwise, but as wise persons, making good use of your, no, doesn't say good, does it? Making better use of your time, no, making the best use of your time. If we're going to walk with God, we need to manage our time. We need to make the best use of our time. Okay, well, what does that mean? So let's go back to when we were in school. And you're in the classroom. It's an exam day. So the moderator is at the front of the class. The exam papers are on the desk. They're turned over. And the moderator gives you instructions. Listen, you've got 2 hours to write this exam. There's four questions on the exam. The first two are worth 5 marks apiece. And the last two are worth 45 marks apiece. So a total of 100. You've got 2 hours to write the exam. Turn your papers over. Start. Could you envision spending an hour and 45 minutes on the first two questions that are weighted at 5 marks apiece? I mean, we could, and we might even score 5 out of 5 on those two questions, but now that leaves us 15 minutes to answer two questions that are weighted at 45 marks apiece. Is that making the best use of our time writing that exam? Yeah, absolutely not. Well, we are living in exam time, and we have different responsibilities that we have to address. But the time that we allocate to them has to be strategic. We have to make the best use of our time. So what are the responsibilities? What are the activities that are weighed more heavily so that we are demonstrating that we're making the best use of our time? We don't have to guess. The Bible tells us. Let's turn to Hebrews chapter 13. And we're going to start with verse 15. We're going to look at two ways in which we can make the best use of our time. So verse 15, through him, let us always offer to God a sacrifice of praise that is the fruit of our lips that make public declaration to his name. So what's one of the best ways to use our time? Well, the scripture here says sacrifice of praise, fruit of our lips. It's our ministry. But let's look a little bit more closely at the verse. Does it say, through him, let us sometimes offer to God? Let us most of the time? No, the verse here uses the word always. So how do we always offer a sacrifice of praise to Jehovah through our ministry? Don't view the ministry as a weekly event. View the ministry as a daily endeavor. Look for, create, seize opportunities that might be there every single day to give Jehovah that fruit of praise, fruit of our lips. It's not easy, friends, informal witnessing. It's a challenge. And especially when you think of, you know, preaching an unpopular message to, for the most part, an unreceptive people, that's daunting. And then as imperfect people trying to teach God's perfect word, that's daunting. But if we think of it as starting a conversation, don't think of it as, okay, I got to give a witness. Think of it as starting a conversation and then that let it naturally flow. Here's one example of how we can be creative too. So imagine you get an email from your insurance provider and they say, listen, Manny, it's time for renewal. What about answering back, Linda, thank you so much for the email. You've always taken such good care of our financial and insurance needs. Let me ask you, how have you and your family been over the last few years, especially in view of COVID? Just throw it out there. See what they say. And then depending on what they say, we have an opportunity maybe to give a reply with a tie into our hope or the scriptures. Maybe some of us work more from home. And one day we encounter some IT issues and we have to call for support. What about seizing that opportunity? Hey, Mike, listen, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate your efforts in helping me address this issue. Let me ask you, are you working from home or are you working in the office? And just let it naturally flow from there. How do you like working from home? How's it been over the last few years? You know what's helped me? And then maybe share a scripture. And pray to Jehovah, friends. He'll bless our efforts. And if we miss an opportunity, don't feel bad. Just think about how we can do better the next time. And again, when it comes to the ministry, friends, try to enjoy it. We don't want to make it a burden or a heavy responsibility. Make it something that we enjoy. And I'll share with you an experience. So we have one of our sisters in Germany. Her name is Irma. She's 90 years old. And she had been in some serious car accidents and underwent several surgeries. But she could never go in the ministry again. She could never do door-to-door. So what does she do? She thinks, okay, well, what are other avenues that I can pursue? So she gets into letter writing. And so she starts writing letters to acquaintances, to friends, to family, residents in long-term care facilities. Now, just to share with you one experience, she gets a call one day from this woman. And the woman says, listen, you don't know me, but you knew my mom. You used to write biblical letters to her. She passed away, but she kept all the letters and I read them all. Would you mind continuing to write biblical letters to me? Isn't that nice? Let me share with you what Irma says in concluding her experience. She says, I beg Jehovah to continue to give me the strength to serve him. Although I cannot go from house to house anymore, I do what I can. Isn't that nice? So when it comes to the ministry, friends, sacrifice of praise, fruit of lips, do what you can and enjoy what you can do. So that's one way we can make the best use of our time. A second way, let's look at verse 16. Moreover, do not forget to do good and to share what you have with others, for God is well pleased with such sacrifices. What a nice statement. It's diametrically opposed to what the world tells us. No, no, you look out for yourself. You're number one. The Bible tells us, and this is one of the best ways to use our time, is to do good and share what we have with others. Altruism. Do we believe that this is a good way to use our time? Let me share with you an experience. So there was a brother, he was in a hospital waiting room, and he's kind of keeled over. He's really anxious. He's got his head in his hand, and the doctor walks by, and he says to the brother, because his wife just had quadruplets, right? So he's a little overwhelmed. So the doctor says, are you all right? And the brother says, I don't know what I'm going to do. I've never been down this road before. And the doctor says to him, you don't need to worry. Your congregation will be there for you. All you have to do is sneeze and 1,000 tissues will be offered to you. Isn't that nice? What had the doctor seen? He had seen that the whole time the wife was in the hospital, a congregation just flooding with love and support. It was almost as if the doctor gave a witness to the brother, right? So friends, when a brother or sister is in need in the congregation, will you, will I, when they sneeze, will you, will I be ready with our tissue, whatever that tissue might be? You know, sometimes we get, we think, well, what can I do? Or sometimes we say to the person, you call me if you need anything. Do you honestly think you're going to get a call? I wouldn't call you. Because it goes to your dignity and stuff like that, right? I'm going to call and ask them. It doesn't work like that. So instead of thinking or saying, you call me, I'm there if you need me. What about putting it this way? Okay, if I were in that situation, if I was in that situation, what would help me? And you've got all the answers you need. And when you're moved to do something, maybe you write a card, you put a little bit of money in there to provide support. Or maybe you send an email, you send a text, gift card, whatever that. When you're moved to do that, don't overthink it. It might be Jehovah prompting you to do that. So just do it. And friends, when we have this approach to do good and share what we have with others, do you realize that we are putting a smile on the face of the sovereign of the universe? Think about that for a moment. The sovereign of the universe can be directly affected by something good that we do. Look at how the scripture ends. For God is well pleased. Can you imagine? We make Jehovah smile when we help someone else. So, time management. Make the best use of our time. How do we do it? It's our ministry. Do what you can. Enjoy what you do. And do good and share what we have with others. A second area in which we can walk with God today has to do with working on our Christian personality. Let's turn to Micah 6 and 8. Micah 6 and 8. He has told you, O man, what is good, and what is Jehovah requiring of you? All right, let's start. What is Jehovah requiring? Number one, exercise justice. This has to do with the way we think. Well, what does it mean to exercise justice? How do we think? We want to treat our brothers and sisters the way Jehovah treats us. So we don't make arbitrary evaluations of the intentions and motives of our brothers and sisters by our own personal measuring stick. We are JWs, not JJs. We are Jehovah's Witnesses, not Jehovah's Judges. He's never asked us to judge, and he never will. So rather than look for reasons to criticize our brothers and sisters, look for reasons to commend them. Let's not put our brothers and sisters under a microscope. Put them on a pedestal. I came across an interesting illustration not too long ago. So think of a diamond. A diamond has sharp edges, right? If you focus on the sharp edges, what are you missing out on? The brilliance and the beauty of the diamond. In Jehovah's eyes, you are all diamonds. We're all diamonds, but we have sharp edges. If we focus on our sharp edges, what are we failing to see? We're failing to see what Jehovah sees, which is the beauty and the brilliance. When we blow out somebody else's candle, we don't shine any brighter. Exercise justice. Number two, cherish loyalty. This has to do with the way we feel. Loyalty is important to Jehovah. Psalms 18:25, with someone loyal, you will act in loyalty. But the verse is not telling us to be loyal. The verse is telling us to how we feel. Cherish loyalty. What do you cherish? Think of something you cherish. What emotions are being stirred? So a few years ago, we were babysitting my niece. Her name is Tina. And it was late fall, early winter. So we had to get her some mittens. She needed some mittens. So we go to the store. And as soon as she sees this pair of mittens, they were red mittens. As soon as she sees them, grabs them, puts them on. And for the rest of the time we're at the store, she is not taking them off. We can't get them off her. So we go to the cash. They have to take the mobile reader, read the tag. get in the car, can't take them off. We get home. And she's just walking around the apartment, looking, staring at these mittens. She was enthralled with them. Bedtime. Yes, finally, we'll be able to take off those mittens. She put her hands together and she put her head on her hands to sleep so that we couldn't take off those mittens. She cherished those mittens. Loyalty needs to be our red mittens. We cannot allow anything or anyone to ever, ever take off our red mittens, our loyalty. Exercise justice, cherish loyalty. Number three, walk in modesty. This is how we act. So exercise justice, the way we think, cherish loyalty, the way we feel, modesty, the way we act. If we're going to walk with God, we need to be modest. We need to recognize our limitations. We have to have a realistic view of what Jehovah expects of us and what we can give him. And brothers, be careful. You know, sometimes we get caught up in putting up all these flags. Oh, I'm the chairman of this committee. I'm the coordinator of this. I'm the overseer of that. Beautiful. Thank you, brother. But have you noticed your wife? She's being neglected. Have you noticed your children? You're not spending enough time with them? Is that modesty? We need to be careful, friends. Husbands, you know that your wife is the most important person on earth. Don't ever forget that. Dads, your children are the most important on earth. Be modest. We have a beautiful example of modesty in Brother Noor. Brother Noor was the third president of the Watchtower Bible and Tract Society. And if you ever read anything about Brother Noor, you'll come to appreciate that he was a very gifted speaker and he had exceptional organizational ability. So one day he's in the writing department and he's talking to a brother that works in the writing department. And he says to him, and take note, friends, he says, here in the writing department is where the most important and the most difficult work gets done. That's why I do so little of it. Pretty impressive, isn't it? That's why I do so little of it. What a beautiful display of modesty. Friends, if we're not modest, we're not walking with God. We're walking alone. Please exercise justice, cherish loyalty, modest. And finally, the third way, we don't put on, we have the mind of Christ. Friends, if we walk with God in these ways, the day will come, and please believe this with all your heart, the day will come by God's undeserved kindness and grace that you and I will walk literally on this earth forever.